Sometimes it's hard to remember that a person can be two things, a decorated Army Ranger and a cold-blooded killer. A man who gave everything for his country and also took everything away from a family. But did he deserve to be executed? This is the story of Jeffrey Hutchinson, a Gulf War hero who also murdered his girlfriend and her three kids. Hi, friends. I'm Katie, and this is Katie Does Crime. Thank you for joining me for the first time if you're new here. I'm a Midwesterner who now lives in New York City, putting my writing degree to use by researching true crime cases that interest me, and hopefully you. And hello to the usual rapscallions and reprobates. Please consider subscribing or joining me on Patreon if you'd like to hear more true crime stories. On September 11th, 1998, 35-year-old Jeffrey Glenn Hutchinson called 911 at 8:41 p.m. to report that he'd killed his family in Crestview, Florida. Jeff, a bodyguard, had been dating Renee Ladine Flaherty for about a year and a half. They just moved in together in what the sheriff's department called just a regular middle-class neighborhood 6 or 7 months before. Renee was 32 years old and a postal worker in Niceville. She had three kids, Jeffrey, 9, Amanda, 7, and Logan, 4. And now they had all been killed with a 12-gauge pistol-grip shotgun that had been left on the kitchen counter when deputies arrived. Renee and the youngest children were found in the primary bedroom. Her eldest son was in the living room, between the couch and the coffee table. Jeff was lying face down in the garage in a daze, covered in blood. The sheriff's department said they didn't know what could have happened, only that it was some sort of domestic situation. Jeff's brother had heard Jeff and Renee joking around earlier in the day when he called, but then the two had an argument earlier in the evening. Jeff packed up his things and went to a local veterans lounge for a drink. Renee called a friend and said he had left and taken her keys and she didn't know where he was. She wanted out of the relationship. When Jeff came back and kicked in the door, the murders began. A neighbor said she had seen one of the boys outside with Jeff the day before, sitting on the back of a pickup truck. Jeff had his arms around the boy. Jeff's brother said he treated Renee's kids like they were his own. Days later, Florida Today reported that Jeff suffered from Gulf War syndrome from his time serving as an Army Ranger in Iraq. Gulf War syndrome, or Gulf War illness, is a chronic disorder that affects people who fought in the 1990 to 1991 Persian Gulf War, Operation Desert Storm. It's different from PTSD in that it shows up as a wide range of physical symptoms like tumors, memory problems, headaches, and chronic fatigue. Experts think it could be from exposure to nerve agents like sarin gas and, sadly, the treatment to protect against nerve agents. In 1996, a local news station produced a segment about Gulf War syndrome where they interviewed Jeff about the effects of his time spent in the military. He said he watched clouds rising from bombed Iraqi bunkers and then came home vomiting blood. A specialist told him his illness was incurable.
Jeff was experiencing severe symptoms of Gulf War illness, which at the time nobody believed was real. The Department of Veterans Affairs and the Defense Department were not recognizing that Gulf War illness was a real condition.
The war had profoundly affected the way that Jeff was able to react, but he was still going out of his way to try to make change for the better for the people that served like he did. He tried to set up an 800 line for other veterans that were being afflicted by the same type of symptoms that he had. Again, not a medical professional. He didn't know anything about it, but he knew that what had happened to him, and it had happened to a lot of other people during that war. They came home and they were getting zero help from the VA or the military or anybody.
His 12-year-old son, who lived with Jeff's ex in Washington State, said the government was ultimately to blame for Renee and the kids dying because they sent Jeff to war. He said, "I'm just sorry it happened. And I care for him a lot and I love him. But I mean, he does need psychiatric help." Jeff was born in Alaska, but lived in several U.S. states and New Zealand before joining the Army. He was discharged as a sergeant when he threatened to kill an officer and his wife, which is especially interesting when you know what he did to Renee and her children. Renee was the type of girl who loved to play football and ride bikes with the neighborhood boys. She went to R-rated movies with her brother when their parents wouldn't allow it, and he always asked her to be his skiing buddy. He said, I never asked my brothers. With Renee, I knew she would go out there and get wet, cold, fall down, and have a good time. She left Chatteroy, Washington, near Spokane, in November 1997 to start a new life in the Florida sunshine on the Panhandle. She had a troubled marriage that ended in an ugly divorce, but when she met Jeffrey Hutchinson, it seemed like a chance for a fresh start. He also lived in the Spokane area and had also gotten divorced from his first partner in October 1996. They dated for several months back in Washington before going to Florida together, and Jeff's ex-wife had actually taken out a restraining order against him because she was worried he might try to bring his son with them. Renee's three kids had been visiting their dad in Alaska for the summer and had only been back in Florida for less than a week before they were killed. Jeff was indicted on 4 counts of first-degree murder. There were 4 delays in the trial, first because Jeff fired his lawyers in September 1999 after deciding that they were conspiring with the prosecution to put him in the electric chair. And then in December 1999, his new lawyer said he needed time to prepare a new defense, insanity. A psychologist said that Jeff had been exposed to chemical and biological weapons in the Gulf War, and the result was that he may not have even known what he was doing at the time of the murders. By May 2000, he had fired his lawyer again and wanted to defend himself. He wasn't willing to plead insanity like his lawyers wanted him to. In June, he decided against defending himself and accepted a court-appointed lawyer. And then the court was too busy to try him until the beginning of the following year. So in January 2001, with the trial ready to begin, 2 mental health experts gave conflicting opinions about whether or not Jeff could be considered competent. One said he was manic depressive and bipolar and should not stand trial. The other said he just had a behavioral disorder and wasn't mentally ill. The judge sided with the second psychologist, who had experience with over 300 homicide defendants. But the other one argued that not being able to admit that you're mentally ill is a marker of someone with bipolar disorder who should not stand trial. Still, the trial began. Jeff's defense was that 2 masked men had broken into the home. He struggled with them, and they killed Renee and the kids. It was part of a government conspiracy to get him back for speaking out about Gulf War illness. Jeff had mentioned some guys being in the house later in his 911 call, but he didn't know how many. After he was arrested and was being questioned, he started telling the government conspiracy version of the story. The authorities reminded him that he had blood on his clothes and shotgun residue on his hands. He had bits of Jeffrey on his leg. And of course, he had made that 911 call saying he had killed his family. But when he heard this, he said, "What the hell are you talking about? Nobody is looking for them." Was it an alibi, or did he really believe his story? Jeff's lawyer called him a mentally incapacitated soldier of misfortune, but he was also trying to push this narrative that the prosecution couldn't prove the voice on the 911 call was Jeff's. The prosecutor said, "Mr. Hutchinson was the only one there who hadn't had his face blown off, with the handset still open to 911. You can hear the deputies arriving." The cordless phone was inches from Jeff's head when authorities found him, and friends testified to identify his voice as the caller. His blood alcohol level was 0.17% even after he was taken in for questioning, so who knows how high it was at the time of the murders. 0.08 is the legal limit for driving, and Jeff's was more than twice that. A doctor said that alcohol can prompt mood swings in a person with bipolar disorder, and that Jeff may not have remembered what he had done. The assistant state attorney said that every shot was fatal. Renee and her 2 youngest children took bullets to the head. Her eldest was shot in the chest, but even as he was dying, he tried to get away. Jeff shot him again as he was kneeling down near the couch. 5 bullets, 4 deaths. Their blood was on his shirt, shorts, hands, and the bottoms of his feet. The prosecution said even the weapon he used made this premeditated murder because it needed to be pumped, cocked, and fired over and over, which gave him time between each round to consider what he was doing. The assistant state attorney showed the jury how the weapon worked as Jeff shook his head no. It only took the jury a little over 2 hours to convict him on 4 counts of first-degree murder. He was sentenced to death for killing the children and given life in prison for murdering Renee. Even up to his execution date, Jeff's family was saying that the forensic evidence didn't tie Jeff to the crime and that the state of Florida was just hell-bent on executing him. His brothers said he was innocent and that, quote-unquote, he's never changed, his story never changed. But with all due respect, his story did change. When Jeff called 911, drunk after his argument with Renee, he said he had killed his family. The story about the masked intruders came later. And he didn't have any markers of any physical altercation with any killers. Renee's brother said he did this. The cruelty, the way he did this, for him to get a needle and to be put to sleep feels not cruel enough. Jeff appealed his conviction multiple times over the years, citing ineffective counsel who had never tried a capital murder case and offering theories about who the real killers were, guys from Quantico, two of his former friends, and even Renee's ex-husband. His family said there was blood on his feet, but it wasn't smeared, that the murder weapon was broken, and that it wasn't his voice on the 911 call. They said the caller had a slight Southern accent and used the word ma'am, which wasn't typical of Jeff. I would argue that he had been living in the South, where people often say ma'am, surrounded by the Southern accents that you hear on the panhandle of Florida, which is right below Alabama. And I haven't been able to find anything about the murder weapon being broken, but who knows when it was supposedly broken. Maybe he did it himself after the murders. Later, as he continued to file motions and appeal, Jeff asked to be declared insane from the effects of sarin gas. He argued that damage to his brain should have meant that he was never eligible to face the death penalty. And I do think there's a chance Jeff was actually delusional about who committed the murders thanks to sarin gas. Some experts did testify that he wasn't competent to be executed. Still, the Supreme Court of Florida rejected his last appeal, saying that experts found that Jeff was using the government conspiracy angle as an alibi, not a delusion. A delusion takes over someone's life because they believe it so hard, while Jeff had been adjusting his story over the years. And prison staff said it wasn't a regular topic of conversation for him like a delusion would have been. Jeffrey Hutchinson was put to death by lethal injection on May 1st, 2025, at the age of 62. Now, I'll never side with a murderer at the expense of a victim, but I have to say I really feel for Jeff and all veterans. I believe he committed the murder, and it's kind of not really a question in my mind, but I think there's a chance that he wasn't himself in that moment. Renee's brother remembers how when he hugged Renee and her kids goodbye as they were leaving Washington, he said to Jeff, "Take care of my sister and the kids." And Jeff said, "I will. I love your sister." And no one argues that he took great care of Renee and the kids. Jeff was a hero to his family after enlisting in the Army at the height of the Cold War, and as an Army Ranger, no less. But after his trial, his attorney said, "There was something wrong with that man. He wasn't all there. He pops in and pops out." What gets me is that on the 911 recording, he says, "Yes, ma'am. Ma'am, I just shot my family. I love my family. Ma'am, I love my family." I think he was probably trying to wrap his head around what he had just done versus how he thought of himself. And I think he probably should have let his lawyers offer an insanity defense at trial. His brother said that when he came back from the war, Jeff was throwing up blood and bleeding out of his ears. Men he served with said the chemical nerve agent alarms were going off near them so often at one point that the batteries on the alarm died. Jeffrey Hutchinson should have been a hero for what he went through, but as so many soldiers are, he was used up and discarded. I don't want the tragic deaths of Renee and her kids to get lost in this, but I'm also pretty sure I don't think Jeff should have been executed. Thank you for tuning into my podcast episode. I'm just a true crime fan like you are, and I really appreciate you taking a chance on me. Please subscribe and tell a friend if you like spending this time together. You can also find me on YouTube in the flesh by searching Katie Does Crime.